I'm in my lecture going to be comparing the barbarians and the role they played in the Roman Empire to hackers in modern imperialist America. I don't have any projections, so if anyone wants to make funny little shadows on the wall, that's all right, to compliment my presentation. All right. Just really wanted to say, it's kind of funny that my big brother actually looks exactly like this guy. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, anyway, on with my presentation. Okay, well, my whole thesis statement was that in the time of the Roman Empire, they controlled, basically what was known as Western civilization at the time. The barbarians were the enemies to their society. They're savages. They lived on the outskirts of the whole society. You know, they were kind of revolting, terrible people that, everyone hated so much. And today, the United States, in their own, trying to make themselves the center of the civilization, in making their own type of structured culture, they're now encountering a new enemy, which can actually be compared, which are the hackers, the hacker community. Before I can actually go into actually making this comparison, I just want to talk about history and the cyclical nature, or the possible cyclical nature of history. So if I'm going to actually make comparisons of, something that happened, over 1,000 years ago and something that's happening today, it is kind of important to take a look at history and time in general. Now, if you really if you think about history and you think of the nature of history, history moves with time, right? So, without time, there is no history. The reason how us as humans can recognize anything historical is by, looking back in time. So history and time are running completely parallel with one another. In that sense, really, since time's continuous, time doesn't stop, then how can history be cyclical if it's parallel, if it never stops, if it continuously moves? How can we possibly say that history is a cyclical thing? I'm sure everyone's heard, the expression, history is doomed to repeat itself, or, something of that ilk, Okay, maybe you haven't heard it, but if you have, then you know what I'm saying. It's not too difficult to actually argue against that in the respect that history never really does stop. So how can it loop back and actually repeat itself? But if you really, you take a look at history. Now, what is history? History is what we remember of generations past, of societies past. If we take a look at humans, where humans come from, no matter what. And over the last adapted to our surroundings and even gone so far to make our surroundings actually adapt to us. In the beginning, when people were, living in a state of nature, we had to, the humanity had to actually, conform to nature, conform to your surroundings. Eventually, ultimately, people began, banding together, creating societies, groups of people working together. These groups, really, as we're going to see later, somewhat almost stopped the physical evolution of humanity as being adaptable towards nature. So, for example, we don't have to go out and hunt anymore. I don't have to go out and kill anybody. The law will take care of that for me, if I really need them to, So, in that sense, we've created these societies and these groups that help, bring everybody together, govern everything. And even though they've somewhat stopped the physical evolution of, the species, interestingly enough, by living inside the society and by conforming to the bounds that we've created, we're actually now evolving within the bounds of our society. And, you know, since we do that, as societies fall and collapse, history does, tend to actually repeat itself. So even though it is a complete continuum, and it actually never does stop, you can't deny the cyclical nature of biology and of evolution and of, you know, all that good scientific stuff like that. And so therefore, since, you know, even though history and society are running parallel to time, because they're ultimately based on natural principles, they do tend to cycle back, or at least they definitely give the perception of cycling back and repeating themselves. So history does tend to repeat itself. Even though we're living in a society where people are actually, you know, working together, trying to diversify our talents to work as one whole, the nature of self-love, of, you know, love of the self, comes back, you know, throughout the ages of, you know, in the Romantic period, you know, the love of the self. And, I mean, no one can really deny the fact that ultimately, you know, everyone has a little bit of selfishness. I mean, you have to think of yourself at some point, right? I mean, you ultimately have to do things for yourself to survive. This tends to manifest itself more in some people than in others. For example, someone who gets, extremely selfish and greedy with any kind of control or power, they're going to want to get to the top, and they're going to want to stay there. They don't want anyone else up there. So they're going to try and keep everyone else down underneath them. And in that respect, in a society where, you know, control is necessary to keep everyone within these bounds, to keep them from escaping into the state of nature, and to keep them inside, you know, world that we create to make us, you know, for whatever reasons, to make everyone safer or whatever. The self-love, you know, and love of the self needs to be discouraged at a larger level. You know, and people, I mean, okay, look at me, I'm up here talking, blah, 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 right? I'm talking, you know, but I'm, you know, all the people here at this conference that come up here and talk, well, maybe these are probably a lot of topics that are discouraged in general, you know, that people don't exactly, you know, or the powers that be don't exactly want a lot of these topics out there. And, I mean, for their own obvious reasons, they need to oppress those types of desires to further their own. And, in that respect, self-love is important, but unfortunately tends to be extremely denied. Now, if we take a look at the actual Roman Empire, okay, they had this extensive set of manners, what they called manners. You know, it's like, oh, okay, I'm a Roman, you know, I don't go out and do stuff, I don't get my hands dirty, I'm a Roman, you know, I'm a citizen, I got the army to protect me, I got, you know, food whenever I want it from the granaries. I got all the corn I want, all this good stuff. They really ended up almost, de-evolving in a way. The barbarians to the Roman people were perceived as extremely ugly, hideous creatures, very rough-edged, horrible, mean, terrible people. And, the reason, to actually portray them as such, as savages, or even as subhumans, like these destructive people that live on the fringes of society, of, you know, their perfect world, by criminalizing these people, you're creating a negative pull for all the citizens to actually, you know, kind of revolt against and shape themselves in respect to the opposite of what is negative for the society or negative for the culture. And the barbarians, sure, at the time they were big and scary, but being portrayed as such really helped keep the masses under control by not wanting to be like these horrible people. In today's culture, interestingly, look look how the hackers portrayed, you know, throughout everything. I mean, you got like, you know, the skinny, nerdy kid with broken glasses, got his pants up to here, you know, not that good with the ladies. You know, he's really smart, okay, give him that. You know, all right, smart guy, knows computers and stuff. But, you know, I don't know if I really want to be like that guy. No one really, but, you know, sure, it's not all true, but it's how it's portrayed, right? And so then you have the good citizens or whatever, you know, seeing this negative image. And, you know, sure, sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's whatever. But at the same time, it's that negative pull, the negative pull that, you know, people don't want to be like. You know, they don't feel comfortable in that respect. And therefore, you know, by giving these negative images, you know, and it tries to keep that, you know, the self-identity of these people on the, you know, the fringes, then maybe not accepting everything that they're fed by the leaders, you know, it keeps them in a negative light. It gives a, you know, a base portrayal for other people to, you know, oppose themselves to. And, you know, just, I mean, overall, it may even play upon the consciousness of those people, maybe making them feel bad about themselves. Thing, oh, well, you know, some people may, you know, accept the image. I have broken glasses, but I don't accept the image. But so, all right, well, let's actually take a look, you know, who were the barbarians? What are barbarians? What are barbarians anyway? The barbarians were, like I said, you know, they were from, well, if you take a look at the Western Roman Empire, you had the Germanic tribes of Northern Europe, right, the Goths, the Vandals, ultimately were the ones that came down and were like, all right, Rome, bam, bam, bam. A long time before that, the Roman Empire actually split up into two different empires. So you had the Western Empire, which was based in Rome, you know, Italy, Europe and stuff. Then you had the Eastern Empire, which was based in Constantinople, you know, based in Turkey, much of Asia. The European barbarians overthrew the Western Roman Empire first, long before the Eastern Empire was destroyed. You know, after a while, you know, the barbarians eventually, you know, couldn't take the control of the Romans anymore, which I'll touch more on in a minute, and eventually, ultimately, you know, killed a bunch of them, took over themselves. And eventually, the same thing happened a long time later, but in the Eastern Empire as well. Based in Constantinople, based in Turkey, the Eastern Empire ended up staying in power much longer, and ultimately actually even went through and, you know, beat up a lot of the barbarians that had settled in Africa and Italy, and went through and took over most of their empire again, and ultimately were overthrown by the Asian barbarian tribes. So, those were the barbarians. They were from, you know, Asia, Northern Europe, basically people that were closer, you know, closer to nature. They valued their freedom more, and, you know, they didn't really appreciate the Roman control over them. And ultimately, it played against the Romans. If we take a look at how, you know, control. Why would the barbarians revolt? Why would they do this? What happened? What went wrong with the Romans? You know, they had this great civilization. They built roads everywhere. You know, they built cool buildings, and they had rocks and stones and all kinds of good stuff. But if you think about control and controlling of people, right? Control in general. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different ways you can control people. Right now, you're all listening to me. But you know, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not controlling you. I mean, it's the environment we're in. This environment we're in, you know, you're standing there listening to what people are telling you all day. Or, you know, you're just listening it and then weighing it and reasoning with it yourself. In the Roman Empire, they would control their people. You know, they'd go in with big organized armies and swords and bop people on the head and be like, all right, bam, we're taking you over. And, you know, if you got 20 guys with swords run into your house and you're eating dinner, you're like, all right, whatever, fine, dude, take my money, get out of here. What? You know, but they would stay. And eventually, you know, the people, I mean, they had to accept this. They had, basically, they had no choice. because they were, you know, imposed upon with a physical control. And if they got out of line, all right, kill them, beat them up, chop them, whatever, whatever it takes. That's probably the most obvious, you know, form of controlling anything, you know, physical force. I mean, it's so obvious and apparent, right? Like, if someone comes up to you and punches you in the face, then you, you know, your face hurts, you know? There's all your, all these people around being like, whoa, what? That guy just punched him in the face, you know? Or, you know, if you can't deny that it happened. There's no way to actually say, all right, I didn't just get punched in the face. Then you look in the mirror and you got a big black eye or something, broken nose or something. So something like that, I mean, it's not only completely obvious and blatant, but physical harm is not cool. I mean, no one likes it. Like, if I hurt myself, it hurts. Ouch. I don't want to get hurt. You know, I especially don't want someone else coming over and bopping me with a sword or something. Ah, what are you doing? You know? So, ultimately, people resent this. Any type of physical control. I mean, and today, what's the easiest type of societies or leadership to revolt against? The people, you know, the leaders in countries that torture their people or do horrible things or, you know, genocides and massacres and all this stuff. You see that and you're like, whoa, massacre, you can't do that. That's not cool. Right. It's not cool. So, you know, if you think about it, if a leader's going to stay in control, right, and they want to be really, really smart about it, they know they can't just go beat you up. They know they can't just go pound on you and say, all right, you're going to listen to me now. Because, yeah, you might listen to them for a little while. But eventually, you know, hey, you might go to the gym and work out every day and then go beat them up. Or you might get all your friends together and be like, yo, we don't want to get beat up anymore and go beat them up. You know, which is ultimately what happened with the barbarians. They wanted their freedom. And when a bunch of, you know, Roman people come in there and say, okay, you're going to speak Roman now. Okay, you're going to pay us taxes. Okay, you're going to do what we say. You know, after a while, they were like, what? We spoke German before. We didn't have any problems. We didn't have to pay all these taxes. Sorry, someone left their banner. So, you know, after a while, the resentment became so strong that the barbarian said, all right, that's it. We're not taking this anymore. And, I mean, history. They went in and they kicked the Romans out. And they took over Italy. They took over Africa. And eventually, you know, the Huns attacked Asia. They got repelled, but all the other Asian tribes, but they kept attacking and attacking for years, until finally the Turks came in and brought the Eastern Roman Empire down, and that was the end of that was the end of Rome. If we take a look at society today, the principles haven't changed. It's you have to impose some type of method of control over people. Yeah, all right. Most people want to work together because we want to be comfortable. You know, it's nice having good stuff like. If you have, like, a hot tub, so that's cool, man. I like having a hot tub. If I lived in the woods, I wouldn't have a hot tub, right? I get bitten by bugs all the time. Who wants that? I have to look for my own food. Oh, it's so convenient to go to the grocery store and buy whatever. You know, so, you know, the benefits of society and culture, they're great. You know, there's all kinds of good stuff that happens all the time. But, you know, there's always, you know, there's always ulterior motives. I mean, people don't, you know, ultimately, probably, maybe, a lot of people go into politics, go into professional leadership roles, thinking, okay, you know, I'm going to do good, you know? I want to do right for the people. I want to do it right. You know, I feel bad. Okay, good example, like, okay, taxes. The last big tax cut we had mostly affected rich or upper class, people that made a lot of money. So, okay, what about the people that don't make a lot of money? Like, if I looked at my own taxes, I didn't really get a tax cut. I didn't get any money back or anything like that. So I think, all right, you know, everyone's talking about this tax cut. I don't get it. You know what? That's it. I'm going to speak for the people. I'm going to get up there, and I'm going to run for office. I'm going to get in office. I'm going to make things right for everybody. So then, you know, you get into office. Then some guy comes up to you, and he's like, all right. Give you $1 million if you sneak this into a bill or something. You're like, all right, no, you know. Then you go home, and... like, you know, actually, that $1 million sounds pretty good. And ultimately, even people that mean well may succumb to corruption or other facets of, you know, bad things. So, you know, I mean, and then you have the people who have ulterior motives that go into it in the first place. into professional leadership, because we're at a point in our society where leaders are professional leaders. I mean, that's what they do for a living. You know, that's they don't go home and go to the office and hang out. Though their friends are also politicians too. They're leaders of the country. So ultimately, they become out of touch with the people they represent. Not in all cases, but in a lot of cases. So if you actually take a look, so they have to think about how to keep their society under control, how to keep them all in one, nice uniform unit where people aren't going to stand up and be like, hey, taxes, or hey, this, or hey, that. So they have to, and they know they can't go beat you up. So they have to think of some different type of control, some different way to actually keep people listening to them and paying taxes and, keeping them in power and all this other good stuff. mind control, information control. If you take a look at mind control, a good example of mind control, I don't know if we have any Scientologists here, but Scientology, if you actually take a look at how it works, they use mind control tactics to convince people to sign up to their religion or their beliefs or whatever. And not, Scientology is just, there's all kinds of different little sects and cults and stuff that use these tactics. If you break them down and look at them, they're actually extremely simple. You could just find someone who's maybe not that happy, bring them into a room, show them a bunch of movies, have everyone there be like, oh, yeah, friend, everything's great and happy here in this land, in our land. Everything's great. And they only feed you the information they want you to know. And ultimately, you base your decisions on the information that's given to you. A good example is, making decisions. If for example, you don't know what kind of computer to buy, right? And you go and you read these reviews on these two machines. And one has all glowing reviews and it tells you all the great stuff about it and everything. And the other one tells you all bad stuff, all the negative stuff. Well, everything has a good and bad side. But if you only hear the good side of one thing and you only hear the bad side of the other thing, of course you're going to tend to favor the side that sounds good. So by controlling that type of information, by controlling all the stuff that you actually listen to and hear, you're going to base your decisions on what you perceive as fair judgment. But it's really maybe not the entire story. So if you take a look at something like that, in cults where they take you out to a nice retreat and everyone is friendly and happy and everything goes down this certain road. If we take a look at the American society, you grow up and you see the news. And the news, for a half hour, they tell you everything that goes on in the world. Okay? A lot of people in the world really can't hear it all in half an hour. So, what kind of information are we getting out of that? We're getting the information that they want to tell you for whatever reason. Be it, marketing, commercial dollars, or maybe some other agenda or whatever. But by only hearing these parts of the story or parts of the news and, reading newspapers and only getting a part of the story, ultimately, the people, the citizens of the country are led down a single path, a single way of thinking. And all your decisions that you ultimately base, not just on world views, but ultimately these types of opinions are going to permeate their way into your everyday decisions. For example, if you're constantly, if your body adapts or if your mind starts to adapt, just as a body would adapt to some kind of physical stress or something like that, your mind ultimately is going to start to adapt to the directions that they're pointing you towards. And those decisions that you're going to make are going to affect, your everyday life, family life, all this stuff, because your mind is going to begin to adapt, to that, the information that they give you. And just as in the Roman Empire, as the Romans were the Roman people, they didn't really have, you know, to worry about fighting. They didn't have to worry about finding food or anything like that. You know, ultimately, their bodies became weak and weak over generation after generation. And it, you know, the physical principle of survival of the fittest is, you know, it pretty much went away. Okay, whatever. That's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, as long as everyone's happy and everything's cool. That's cool. But because they imposed a physical control over people, when their people became weak, the physically strong were able to knock them down and completely take them out. So if you take a look at the control imposed today over people, you know, a mind control, it is a subconscious control. You know, and if you take a step back and look at it, I mean, it's almost obvious. It's so easy to get away from. I mean, if you just take a look at the information, if you can just see all the information instead of just a little part of it, then you can make, you know, the decisions that would be more inclined to you to be fair than the decisions that the people giving you the information think are fair. And I mean, in that case, it would be probably, you know, more apt to a more fair and balanced type of society that way. However, I mean, the people in power maybe don't want to take that risk. You know, there is a freedom of information. You can find this stuff. A good example is if you take the latest Michael Moore film, Fahrenheit 9/11. I saw that movie, and I said, I already knew all this stuff. Because I stay up on all the world news, and I listen to alternative sources of news. But I know so many people that saw that movie, they came out, they're like, oh, what? I can't believe this. How did this happen? You know, and I'm like, huh, interesting. Well, that's cool. I'm going to be talking about the same thing in my presentation next week. But, you know, it's that exact control of information. The people in power, they give you the story they want you to know, and you don't end up getting the entire story. And just as the Romans evolved physically weak in a society where they didn't have to physically fight, you know, today we're living in a society where almost you don't have to think. You know, you come out of school. Yeah, okay, here's the standard. You know, you go to high school, you come out of high school, you go to college. You get out of college, you get a job. You get a job and you get to make family and sit home and watch TV all day and, you know, listen to what they tell you on the television. I know lots of people that tend to, they follow that track. All kinds of people. I look back at the people I went to high school with and I take a look at them and I'm like, what? You know, how could they, you know, and a lot of them consider themselves to be extremely successful. They get good jobs, make lots of money. Okay, cool. Money, you know, everyone's happy with money. And they are totally happy than just sitting at home watching the boob tube all night. And they feel like, you know, they're free in that respect. Which, okay, I mean, if they're happy, cool. But at the same time, I mean, if you take a look at, you know, in the Roman Empire, you know, genius. If you look at genius, when a group of people get comfortable and you don't, it kind of almost dulls the mind. It dulls the spirit. It dulls the body. You don't have to actually come up with any kind of, you know, new revolutionary ideas. You don't have to worry about, how am I going to feed everybody? I'll come up with a great idea. I'm going to build this giant machine that makes corn and sends it down. You know, you don't have to think about that stuff anymore. And, you know, in that respect, people ultimately, if this type of mind control in society continues, ultimately, just as the Romans physically degraded, American society is going to mentally degrade in the same exact way. Therefore, because of the, you know, implements of control, the instruments of control that are used, then you have basically a repeat of history in a theoretical sense. Yeah, it's not the exact same thing, but in principle, it is. But then if you take a look at, you know, people who do look at all the information, you know, people who can get into these information sources, who can manipulate it, who can actually mess with the system and, you know, kind of shake them up a little bit so they're not totally hands-on with everything. You know, these are the people that just as the barbarians were scary to the Romans, I mean, these are the people that are scary to, you know, the Americans today. Okay, I'm an American, but, you know, I mean, these are the people on the outskirts, the people who, you know, the people in power don't want them so much, you know, involved in all this stuff. Just as, actually, when, you know, the Roman people became so weak that they no longer fought in their armies, where the armies even became weak, where they would march all day and they'd be like, ah, oh, this armor's too heavy, do we have to wear it? And they were like, yeah, you're right, it is heavy, take it off. Oh, man, these swords are heavy, we don't want them. So they had daggers instead. And so eventually the army degraded because they didn't have to fight, you know, so they became weak. So what did the Romans do? They hired the barbarians in their armies because the barbarians were still really strong, you know, mercenary armies and all this other stuff. Okay, well, you know, if you're going to hire the people that don't like you in your army, you know, ultimately that wasn't so good for them either. But, I mean, ultimately, if you look at the phone companies, when, you know, all the freakers came in and started messing with the phones, who would they hire? The freakers. They hired them to make their security stronger. And today, when you look at security, a lot of security people, who do they hire when their networks are, you know, in danger or whatever? They look to hire hackers. It's almost the same exact principle. Like, oh, it's almost like a mercenary army of people. They know the ins and outs of the system. They know how to bring it down, so who better to defend it, right? But it was ultimately the barbarians that, you know, ended up staying back. You know, they weren't fully accepted, that didn't go in and help the Romans out, that ended up going off and doing what they did. So if you take a look, I mean, at the advantages, I mean, obviously, I mean, I've already covered, I think, all the advantages of barbarians and hackers. As long as there is an organized society, as long as there is, you know, an organized group of people working together, ultimately, they'll have to. I mean, they have to impose, you know, as the thirst for power grows, the people in power have to learn how to control masses of people. Because, you know, people are different. Everyone's different. I don't think I'm exactly like anyone in this room. At least, I'm pretty sure I'm not. I don't see anyone that looks exactly the same. You know, do you know anyone that's exactly like someone else? I have brothers that are twins. And they're totally different. They're identical twins. And these identical twins are genetically, and you know, you know, and then you take groups of people. You know, groups of people are going to be different. You know, if I take all the people that live in New York City, oh, okay, New York City is a bad example. It's a very metropolitan town. Okay, if I go out to Long Island, okay, I'm from Shoreham in Long Island. A little town, we got a nuclear power plant. Woo! And if I take all the people in that town, and, you know, I take that community of people, and then I go to, like, Florida somewhere, some little town in Florida, these people are going to be completely different. In fact, you probably won't even be able to draw many similarities between any one person in each place, unless they came from there or a similar region. And, you know, because of that, I mean, which, if you think of, you know, localized government control, people tend to be more happy in small groups, where small groups can help, you know, shape their little environment. And when you take something as massive as a country that's humongous with millions of people in it, it's impossible to please everybody, right? And however, being the people in power, you have to keep them all under wraps, every single one of them, no matter how different they all are. And because of that, then subversive forms of control are almost completely necessary to keep all, you know, everybody under one major umbrella. And it's always going to be in those large types of power-hungry societies. The people on the outskirts, the people who can resist and identify those forms of control, the people who can actually, you know, stand on the outside, look in, and at least understand everything that's going on, you know, and that are ultimately going to be the true, you know, I think the really true free people, no matter, you know, what you term freedom. Yeah, I can go out and say anything I want, but, you know, if I'm just going home and watching TV every night, where does it matter what I say if no one hears it? right? So it's always going to be those people on the fringes that are going to make the differences, that are going to be, you know, the geniuses that change things, that come up with new ideas, and, you know, ultimately, you know, at least show people the weaknesses of the system to avoid any, you know, to avoid the, you know, negative aspects of a controlling, power-hungry society to get completely out of control. And that's it. That's all I really have to say in my presentation. Does anyone have any questions? All right, no questions. Oh, yeah, question. Right, okay, this is purely speculative, but it's a good question, because let's say, for example, history does repeat itself, and a group of people, you know, whatever happens, and, you know, the misinformation of the powers that be becomes so apparent, where the masses say, ah, forget this, man, we've had it. Whoop, they overthrow the government, everything starts to fall to heck. You know, in the time of the Roman Empire, you know, they didn't have any of the technology or the infrastructures or anything that we had now. Yeah, okay, they built all kinds of roads and good stuff. But, I mean, today if you have, you know, let's just take, for example, the United States. Okay, we got 50 states. If people managed to band together and completely abolish the American federal government, well, we still have all kinds of local government institutions. And, I mean, the America was founded on the principle of localized, you know, localized governments. Like, okay, you got the community, you know, we got our own, you know, leaders and stuff. And then you got the county, and then the state, and then after the state, the federal government. And, I mean, really, that was one of the main points of the Civil War, right? I mean, the Civil War was the horrible, horrible thing. I mean, probably, you know, no one was happy, except for after when it was done, you know, good stuff happened. But, you know, one of the main things was states' rights. The state said, yo, hey, we're supposed to be able to do whatever we want, federal government. The federal government said, no, 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 you do what we say. Okay, yeah, okay. So on a lot of the issues, the federal government was right, and some of the states had some serious, you know, moral bad things going on. But, you know, ultimately the whole principle of the country was to have, you know, little, your smaller states with a large body kind of overseeing everything and taking care of the foreign policy, and the states would take care of them. So, in my opinion, I think that if the federal government did get overthrown, or, you know, there'd probably be chaos for a little while. You know, we might be thrown into a state of anarchy for I don't know, but exactly what would happen. But, you know, I think that we have enough local types of institutions in place where people would be able to pick up the pieces relatively quickly without being plunged into the dark ages, such as happened in the middle. Yeah. Well, that's difficult. I mean, that's difficult to predict. It seems as if you look at I mean, the human race in general. War and fighting, it seems to almost be naturally inherent in human nature, which I don't like. I don't agree with it. It's hard to say where it comes from. I mean, you know, people disagree and they fight and they, you know, they battle each other, but I guess I like to think, idealistically, that if something like that did happen, that people, you know, maybe after seeing this, would learn the lessons of war. I mean, if you could see the negative aspects of war, like with the Iraq war, the Afghanistan, you know, we don't even see a lot of the stuff that goes on over there. And then a lot of times when you do see the people going in and shooting other people, you know, I mean, I remember I read All Quiet on the Western Front, you know, which was one of the biggest anti-war novels. And the part that sticks out in my brain the most is when, you know, the guy's walking through the trenches, you know, and he's crawling through the trenches, and he hits the body of a dead German guy, right? And I think it was World War One. And the guy rolls over and his wallet falls out. And there's a picture of his family, you know, his wife and kids. And, of course, now the character in the book is like, what? How did I not think of that? And, you know, I mean, if you think of a state of war, I mean, if one side of the room declares war on the other side of the room and you start killing each other, you know, now all the people that are related to you and all the people that you love or that you love that, you know, as you die and are gone now they're going to be really sad and it's going to really suck for them if they really liked you. But, yeah, I'm sorry. But, you know, I guess I like to think from an idealistic point of view, you know, if something like that did happen, that people would be able to band together in such a way that they wouldn't have to resort to, you know, warfare and a constant state of war. But, you know, that's just... Yes? That's a good point. Yes. That's actually, yeah, that's an interesting point, especially since America is, I guess, well, the largest power, certainly the largest military power in the world today. I mean, a lot, well, you know, if you take a look at the Iraq thing, we didn't want Iraq, we didn't want Saddam Hussein in power, so we tried to convince everyone, but we couldn't convince people, we just did it ourselves. And now people are following suit, because they want a slice of the pie. They want that oil money. You know, the Koreans and everyone else who fought there, who had big stakes in the country, you know, they're like, yeah, okay. We want to be there now because, you know, but, yeah, so, I mean, if you think about it, if the United States did fall, I mean, how many countries of the world could retain control over their people if such a large power were to fall? It's interesting. They would have to make sure that the people in their societies were extremely happy with where they were, I would think. Yeah. No, you're absolutely, it's extremely arrogant. I apologize. You're right. That was a pretty arrogant statement, but yeah, but I guess if you think about, okay, you're right. I mean, that's a good point. Yes. Possible. Mm-hmm. Well, here, you had your hand up first in the front here. Yeah. I love this discussion. This is incredible and great. We're running out of time, but here, let me tell you, you had your hands up one more. Right? I agree. Okay, here, one more. Brett.
All right. My apologies to the speaker, but we have run out of time. There is an opportunity for the open mic tomorrow at 10 a.m., sponsored by Cheshire Catalyst and brought to you as a special service by Hope 5. I hope you'll all attend. It will be in this room, 10 o'clock tomorrow. But for now, we got to get the next speaker up.
Yeah, so thank you, everybody. Thanks for coming. Hope you enjoyed it. Have fun with the rest of the conference.